I got a lot of your questions. And again, I want to express what a privilege it is for me to. Let's try again. Oh.
Hello. Ha! Good morning! Oh, what a beautiful morning! Okay, so we can make it a little softer, I think. I don't want to be deafened by my voice. This is better, yeah. I mean, I don't want to sound like Charlton Heston, I can tell you. Again, it's a privilege to be here, and to be here among so many seekers and people who seek justice, even if they may not have found it. The questions you asked me on your cards are overwhelming questions that really represent how much pain there is in this room and how much pain there is in almost every room that we all live in. And it really sort of brings home how important it is for us all it is to be mindful. I'll try to incorporate some of the answers to your questions in what I'm going to talk about this morning and keep a focus on solutions and not only the problems. I oftentimes like to start out with this little video from the lab of my friend Ed Tronick, who's an attachment researcher in Boston, now happily ensconced in Rome for a sabbatical. I'm very jealous of him. And he has been running a laboratory for the last 40 years or so, where he studies a very simple thing, much simpler than what I study, namely something called a still-face paradigm. And it's about where he measures moms and babies playing, and at some point mom is asked to freeze her face, and then he measures what happens. And somehow he's been studying it for 40 years. I don't know, I thought he must have found by now all the solutions, but he hasn't. And he has these wonderful videotapes. And the reason why I'm showing you this videotape is for two reasons. One is for you to notice what happens on the screen, but even more, to notice what happens inside of you. Because as you see a very mildly unpleasant thing, namely this mom not paying any attention to her kid for 2 minutes, this kid will become upset, as people are when you don't pay attention to them, and you will become upset. And I'm really showing you this movie to illustrate the mirror neuron system, that you will have sensations in your body that are reflective of the sensations that this mom and this boy are going to feel. And this is sort of at the core of what ties us together as human beings and how we transmit our pain, sorrow, and joy to each other. And so what you just heard is something that the Quakers discovered a long time ago, that most talk is pretty frivolous, and that most of what we say is not very important, and they're talking about giraffes and zebras and dinosaurs, and that's usually what people talk about. And it's important to talk because you need to find some way of resonating with each other, and whether you talk about, didn't your basketball team beat our basketball team last night or something. Doesn't do a thing for me, but when I go back to Boston, everybody in Boston will be upset about your basketball team beating ours. And people will be turning over cars and stuff like that. Like people get all excited about the most trivial issues. And that's these issues tie us together as human beings. So this mom and this little boy are just talking nonsense like most of us do most of the time, and they're having a good time because they share the nonsense. Bug in her ear and it says, freeze your face, don't respond to anything the boy does. He says, "Mommy, mommy, it's me." Anybody feels anything in their body at this point? Can you put a hand where you feel it in your body? That's your vagus nerve going down into your chest to give you your heartbreaking feelings. And you feel it. And peace and quiet has been restored. Nothing happened. You would even say, and I say it with some conviction, that this was a positive experience. Because this boy's brain is getting formed at this stage of his life. And as we all know in this room, that a lot of shit happens to people throughout our lives, and we get upset. But what this boy learns is I can become really upset, but 2 minutes later, my mom will come back. And that set the timing mechanisms in his brain that says, I can feel really bad, but before too long, rescue will be on its way, and I can tolerate feeling really bad because I know that my Redeemer liveth and that somebody will come along. And so if you have experiences like this as a little kid where you feel bad, but you get picked up, and anybody who deals with kids on a daily basis know that kids feel pretty bad a good amount of the time. If you have a predictable response, you know, I can tolerate feeling bad, and that carries with you for the rest of your life. And so if you don't have this experience because your mom is too frozen, too upset, too freaked out, or whenever you become upset, she becomes more upset than you are, you know that there's nobody there to help me out, and that sets up the stage for some of the feelings that you guys talk about, who say, I get upset all the time and I don't know why, because there is no stability inside of yourself that knows that at the end, this will come to an end. A very nice thing, actually, that I think when you do yoga, to some degree, you can instill that sense of timing in your brain by going through this movement and feeling and resuscitating timing mechanisms in your brain, for example. So it's a perfectly lovely mom. You see how distressed she looks as a kid is doing badly, and they get reunited, and everything is fine. But it leaves a trace, because 6 months later, she's a postdoc in the Tronics lab. The little boy comes back to the lab to visit his mom. They put a little cannula on his arm to measure his stress hormones, and when he walks into this room, stress hormones go up a little bit. That boy has no idea why his stress hormones go up, because there's no memory for the event in his conscious brain, but in his arousal brain, he says, this feels creepy. And we have this, all of us have this. We have these little messages that come from the nether regions in our brain that say, I like to sit with that person and not with that person. And people say, why? I say, I don't know. Just I like that person. And you make some rationale for that. And so we get guided by these things, our gut feelings. And if you have a lot of early bad experiences, you get a lot of sensations of, I feel in danger. I feel scared. I feel bad. And you don't know where it comes from. You make explanations for it, but the explanations are pure rationalizations. It's your body keeps sending you messages of, I'm in danger. So a very important part of dealing with trauma is to really find a way of calming that body down so you don't get triggered all the time. And I'll give you some examples of that this morning. But these things are not sort of cute little things like to watch on YouTube. These things are real, and these things form your brain. I showed you this little brain yesterday of a baby, brain of a newborn. There is nothing there. And the brain gets shaped by experience. It's in a use-dependent manner. And so your brain, that is wide open when you're a little kid, tries to make sense out of the world and creates a map of the world of what is safe and what is dangerous, who am I, and what predicts what. When I poop all over the place, my mom is sort of annoyed with me. When I go to the bathroom, my mom smiles at me, oh, I better go to the bathroom. And so you get all these the input into your brain of what makes other people feel good, what's rewarding, and those actually things become hardwired in your brain. And so if you have a lot of early good experiences, you get a sense of, I can make people feel good about themselves, I can make myself feel good about themselves, the world will react to me in certain ways, and these things become hardwired on the basis of our interactions. And so now we're living in a world that kids get raised by iPads and stuff like that. And God help us, what will happen with that? Because our brains are meant to be interactional brains where we have an effect on other people and other people have an effect on us. And to be raised by a screen will create a whole other race of human beings. God knows what it will consist of. So basically we learn early on in life what effect other people have on us, what effect we have on other people, how other people are feeling, how other people are feeling differently from ourselves. And one of the interesting things is what we have learned is to what degree our brains get shaped by these early experiences and shaped in ways that we still are very much puzzled about how we can then change these things back. And one of the tragic things about our funding systems right now in terms of research is that there is a lot of funds to find out why you're so fucked up, but there is no funds on how we can heal people. There's just there is no funding for healing, unless there's a lot of money in them, Dar Hills. So we live in a very complex and not very good society, so I hope that many of you in this room are very powerful and have a major effect on the Senate and funding sources in the NIMH. Let me give an example of how it works. There's a guy who I greatly admire. His name is Stephen Sumi. Stephen Sumi was Harry Harlow's favorite student. And when Harlow died of alcoholism, after having found out all these things about monkeys, Steve went off to Rockville, Maryland to set up the National Primate Lab. And he did more research on the effect of early deprivation on monkeys and on peer relationships of monkeys and genes and deprivation and alcohol, a sensational amount of work that was done on monkeys, but not on humans, because we can never do that research on humans. And he really shows very profoundly, because monkeys are so much like us, how being deprived early on in life and having no friends, having nobody to play with, really changes all kinds of things in your brain. And he also found some things you can do with monkeys to restructure that. And I was with Steve at the conference a few months ago, and he tells me, my lab is getting closed down, and I'm shipping all my monkeys off to a laboratory in France, and I'm giving them away because we have 40 generations of monkeys that we have studied since the late 1940s, and now we have to close down our lab. What's behind it is that there was a dinner at Scalia's house, Justice Scalia, and it went very badly, and the person was there was the head of the National Institute of Health, and things were very tense, and then Rene Fleming was there also. And it turns out that the head of NIH loves to sing, and he says in the middle of all this tense dinner, to Renee Fleming, let's sing a duet. And they sing a duet, and it goes beautifully. They save the evening. And so they really bond. And they say, let's be friends. And he says to Renee Fleming, will you be sort of a spokesperson for the National Institute of Health? You're this marvelous singer. And she says, be happy to, but under one condition, is I hate experimentation with animals, and I'll only join you if you close down all your animal labs. So there goes the animal lab, which was one of the most beneficial things we ever had. So that's how things work. And you just learn that. So, yeah. You're going to adjust me. Many people have tried to adjust me. All right, this, thank you. All right, good. You need to hear me. Would you like my hearing aid also? You don't need my hearing aid. I'm sorry, I can hear everything you're saying. Like right now? Can you hear me now? See, you can shape people's behavior if you're clear. Like, but it's great. No, I totally agree with you. You are a human being, and you deserve to hear. That's why I offered you some extra hearing aids also. But instead, I'll open my mouth. Okay? Good. Okay, good. Good. Okay. So, I work with veterans, and then I come back, and I'm hired by my old Harvard training hospital to become their chief psychopharmacologist. But by now, I have seen all the trauma that veterans have told me about, and when I am supposed to medicate all these patients in the hospital, my ears have been opened up to trauma stories. And what is stunning to me is how many people, when I take a history of them, who are depressed and who feel crazy, have horrendous histories of trauma.